Welcome back to the program. A friend of ours, he is the host of The Politics Show on BCFM. Check it out, it's terrific stuff. And he has been for many, many years I think the go-to guy on all things Bilderberg. I've already mentioned his website, I will tweet it out. It's The Citadel. It's the Game of Thrones Citadel in the real world for all things Bilderberg. The secret society met, of course, in Switzerland over the weekend. Not as you'd expect, not a lot of coverage in the media, in the UK media, bits and pieces in the Express and the Daily Mail, with photographs and just kind of like a passing commentary on who was there, but obviously no real in-depth analysis or questioning going on. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Tony Gosling. Tony, welcome back. Good to have you on. How are you?
Yeah, and I'm fine, Richie. And this is the opportunity we're going to get to have a bit of real coverage of this conference because, as you say, I mean, there was some stuff online on the Express and the Mail, but really nothing in the newspapers and nothing in any of the broadcasting media in the whole of the UK. Bits and pieces in some of the other countries, like in France, for example, a little bit there, which you'd kind of expect, since this is in the French part of Switzerland, this has taken place, and the Gilets Jaunes are very much, in fact, they were, the Swiss Gilets Jaunes were at the Bilderberg protesting there, but really no coverage whatever, loads of coverage of the Champions League and anything that's irrelevant, and it's becoming absolutely clear that the mainstream press is deliberately looking the other way. In fact, the mainstream press is in there chatting with them about the next secret, whatever it happens to be, whether it's a global financial catastrophe or a war, but they're not telling the rest of us. They see it as a sort of bunch of teenagers, basically, sitting in there with Pompeo, Kushner and the rest of them. A cult is, I suppose, what you call the adult version, cooking up the next year or so of whatever it is they've decided to do to us, which is supposed to just appear to happen. And the press are in on this.
They're in on it by very nature of the fact they don't cover it. You're right, Tony. I remember a couple of years ago, it's more than a couple of years ago, Michael Meacher, rest in peace, who was a regular visitor to my radio programmes, Michael stood up and challenged Ken Clark, didn't he, in the House of Parliament when Clark was basically organising the Watford conference. You correct me if I'm wrong now, but Meacher stood up and said, this is outrageous that this would be going on and that British politicians would be attending and that they are not compelled to tell us about the itinerary and what's being discussed. I think Meacher was the last guy in this country to get coverage for kind of standing up to it and asking questions.
Yeah, and by coincidence, he died shortly after. The other thing he brought up was that the Ken Clark hadn't declared this in his register of interest. So actually, that is a breach of the criminal law. There's just that nowadays, I think it's called the Standards Office or something of Parliament has been abolished, was abolished around about 2011. So there's nobody to actually enforce this. But, you know, this kind of meeting, They give out a press release, and a lot of people, particularly in the mainstream press, get a little aside with this press release that doesn't go to the public, that goes to the wire services, saying, you know, basically there will be no press conference, no minutes will be published, no decisions are made, putting the press off. So even if they do know about it taking place, that they're put off from covering it as well. And the message is very clear. It's a sort of dog whistle message to the editors in the mainstream press. Just don't touch this because it's very connected up to the Secret Services. And fascinating looking back over the last few years, Richie, about Pompeo turning up and Kushner turning up. Now, both of these guys in the outside world for the last year or so have been talking about a war against Iran and the potential that there is to have get a conflict going with Iran. I mean, of course, they say Iran would start it, but they're blaming Iran for all of the conflicts in the Middle East. They're blaming Iran for what happened in Syria, even though the Iranians helped to get rid of ISIS. They're blaming Iran for what's happened in Yemen, even though that's the Saudis, who are US and British allies. So they're blaming Iran for everything, these two characters. Funnily enough, though, Iran is not on the agenda this year. Isn't that strange?
Well,
no
can
Middle
I ask
East
you
discussion,
that?
No Iran discussion this year.
Now, could it be that the official agenda, that Iran was omitted from that deliberately, because I can't believe for a minute.
Exactly what I think. And I went back, just took the trouble to go back through the last 10 years or so, and Iran and the Middle East has been on the agenda every year for, since 2013, when it happened in Watford. So every year they talk about this, but just as Pompeo is doing his world tour to sell this war to everybody, which he's been trying desperately to do all around Europe, to Russia, everywhere, basically, suddenly Iran is not on the agenda, because, of course, that might indicate that the military-industrial complex, who are there. Charlie did a super article in The Guardian. He was umming and ahhing. The Guardian were umming and ahhing as to whether they were going to publish anything this year, but Charlie managed to finally twist their arm, and it was published this morning, I think, or maybe yesterday evening. He pointed out in there that you've got the Dutch king hobnobbing with Lockheed.
Yes.
So this is what happened with Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands back in the 70s that caused the scandal that got him not only booted out from being the chairman of Bilderberg, but also, and one does suspect he was thinking of retiring anyway, actually, but also he was disgraced. It was the Lockheed scandal, it's known as, if anyone can remember, in 1975. So exactly the same thing is going on now, is you've got the military industrial. I mean, I described it, I was on the Jason Burmass podcast, who works very closely with Luke Radowski, who was over in Montreux, and what he pointed out is, look, this guy what I pointed out on there is you've got the means, motive and opportunity for this war. So this is why I think it's particularly weird that they've dropped Iran from the agenda this year. So you've got the means, which is, you know, this kind of chit-chat between Lockheed and the Dutch king. You know, there's where you've got the military-industrial complex, the big arms company that make a killing, literally killing from billions from wars. You've got the motive, which is the enormous political pressure there is in the US, via the Israel lobby mainly, but also from the people that want to make money out of it, to pick a fight with the Iranians. And of course we know about Wesley Clark and his admission that they wanted to have take over 7 countries in 5 years, and that is also a motive. There's also this weird background motive, which, I mean, it's not proven, but many people believe, certainly in the Middle East believe, and that is this whole idea of of Albert Pike's letter from 1871. He's the guy that started the Mafia, by the way, predicting these 3 world wars. Then you've got, finally, the opportunity. The opportunity is the supine mass media, the BBC, supine, anodyne. I mean, today, just putting out nothing about the Bilderbergs, talking about some accident of a cruise ship crunching into a quay over a day after it actually happened. This isn't news. And ignoring the real big thing, which is being cooked up at these Bilderberg conferences. The fact that Pompeo is there should signal to everybody this is his big mission, and he has his meeting with people at Bilderberg who are actually capable of getting this Iran war going. That's what bothers me. No coverage whatsoever of this.
No, and some of the people you and I have known over the years and people I've interviewed over the years who are, like yourselves, they're very well briefed and can be unerringly accurate at times in the predictions. I'm thinking of people like Gerald Celente, an old friend of mine, has been saying for 2 years that 2019 is when we're going to see the escalation of not just tension, but a real escalation.
Yeah,
with
there
Iran.
Are a couple of other reasons why I think that this is real. One is the Gulf Cooperation Council now doing everything it can to bring Qatar back on side. So we've had meetings at Mecca, all the Gulf Cooperation Council people getting together. The Saudis using their, you know, cachet of controlling Mecca, the hub of the Islamic world, and they're trying to get very, very hard to get the Qataris, the Emir, and of course that also means Al Jazeera as a massive international media network on board for this assault on Iran of some sort, or a fight with Iran. Of course they've had a blockade for a couple of years now, or 18 months or so, against the Iranian against Qatar, so they've been you know, Qatar has been standing up for itself basically amongst the Iranian, amongst the Gulf states. So they're doing everything they possibly can, like literally over the last few days, to woo Qatar back into line with the Israeli US policy, to ostracize the Iranians. And also the other thing is there's been enormous pressure still back here domestically in the UK to undermine the Labour Party and Corbyn's pro-Palestinian policy, through this attack on Pete, Wilsman on Friday, was basically for just telling the truth.
Well, Wilsman, I
don't know if you saw that Craig Murray pointed out, the former ambassador to Uzbekistan, that the Google search, you don't find any mainstream press articles at all talking about the Al Jazeera documentary that exposed the Israeli embassy.
Well, let's just remind our listeners, Tone, let's just remind our listeners, this is very important, because some of them won't remember this. This is a few years ago. I talked about this on Sunday View yesterday. This was the Al Jazeera expose, which is magnificent, where it showed that a guy called Shai Masot, working for the Israeli embassy, was meeting with people like Joan Ryan and others and saying that there was money available to help bring down politicians like Alan Duncan and others. If ever it was unimpeachable 100% evidence of the Israeli influence in this country, it was brilliant. It's one of the most important pieces of journalism.
Yeah, and
in
mentioned the figure, which is £1 million.
£1 million.
The slush fund, effectively. So anyone that wants to aid the Israeli Foreign Office, the Israeli embassy, in taking out, and that was the expression used, various MPs or ministers or whatever who are pro-Palestinian or not as pro Netanyahu as they should be, there's a lot of money slushing around in order to help them do that.
This is
exactly what Pete Wilsman said.
Yeah.
And yet he's been suspended from the National Executive of the Labour Party because of it.
When are you
really
going to tone? Tony, when are you going to call out Corbyn? Don't interrupt me for 5 seconds. When are you going to call him out, Tony? Two things here going on. Why are people like Wilsman not being supported for telling the truth, number one? And number two, what's this progressive snowflake nonsense of Jeremy Corbyn? I'm not going to go and meet Donald Trump. If you gave an arse, if you gave a shit about the Palestinians as the Labour leader, you'd have to be dragged away from that dinner screaming, because you couldn't wait to get a hold of Trump to say to him.
Well, personally,
Tony.
The boycott, I think, is silly. The Labour Party should be meeting with the person that the American people have elected to be president of the US. And this is misguided policy. There's lots of misguided policy, both in the Labour Party and the Conservative Party. I'd say far more dangerous in the Conservatives, since they're the people in power. I think actually this is part of a much wider agenda, which we touch on from time to time, which is the undermining of democratic politics and the mass media. The idea really is that to have the banks and big business running the whole show. And they deliberately do undermine. I mean, they'll have advisors who are actually agents working for other people. The intelligence services, I think, for quite a long time in the UK, MI6 and MI5, as well as the anti-terrorist branch, have actually been working against the interests of Britain. They've been working against the interests of democratic politics. They've been helping foreign powers to get rid of people who the foreign powers don't like, for example. So I think Corbyn's weakness is that he is not prepared to go on the line and say 100% that I support people like Ken Livingstone and Pete Wilsman. It's not easy for him to do that. Understand that there is this internal Labour Party procedure that needs going through. And I think he's just trying to make sure that he's not seen to be trying to intervene. Of course, the Labour Party is much, much more chit-chatty to the press than the Tories. The Tories, any sort of dispute like this, the Tories will be keeping shtum on 100%, whereas the Labour Party, they're the left has this kind of idea that anything that's going on and their personal little gripes should be leaked to the press. I mean, I just think Corbyn is hanging in there, just hoping, maybe with his fingers crossed, that people will see that people like Wiseman are in the right. But he really, I think, should be making some sort of comment about when somebody's suspended from his party for simply repeating something which is effectively a fact.
The truth, yeah. I hate people like Corbyn for the reasons I've given a million times. Corbyn will be gone in a year or 2 years, and the opportunity to do the things you've just outlined there will be gone as well. Massive amount of tweets coming in on this. Huge interest. Tony Gosling, the host of the politics show at BCFM in Bristol. It's a terrific show. Tony's a great journalist. We're talking about Bilderberg. And I want to chat.
When we're talking about Bilderberg and MI6, I hope you don't mind me just mentioning 2011 Bilderberg, where a certain person popped up there who was Conservative MP Rory Stewart.
Oh, right. Did he?
So he's a Bilderberger. Interesting that he's now putting himself forward as a leadership candidate, which doesn't at all surprise me. I mean, there's a Telegraph article from a couple of years ago saying, well, Rory Stewart admits that some of what his career path has suggests he may have been working for MI6. And it's interesting, isn't it, how we got an MI6 Prime Minister in the running after what many people say was an intelligence services, MI5 in her case, from the Home Office choice, Theresa May, who wasn't actually elected to do her job. Another thing that came out during this whole sort of Brexit debacle and the resignation the other day, so-called, well, I mean, it's a sort of slow-motion resignation, isn't it, of a zombie Prime Minister in the meantime. They're just dragging this out by whatever means they possibly can, keeping it going as long as they can. It is the role of Philip May in Brexit. So this is something which I heard on the, I think it was on the 5 Live or Radio 4 on the Friday that she went and or announced her resignation in 2 weeks' time. And there was an MP on there, a backbench MP, talking about how, well, nobody could actually speak to Theresa May about Brexit. Everything had to go through Philip May. And the phone calls, even by backbench MPs, she wouldn't answer them, she wouldn't take them, but Philip May took them all. And, of course, what he's doing there is he's one of the people who's in control of the negotiations. He's also somebody whose company, Capital Group, in the United States, is the main shareholder in BAE Systems, the biggest shareholder in BAE Systems. So he's a guy with very much an interest with where the Bilderbergs line up, which is with making war for profit. And he's also the guy who's apparently, this is according to this MP, steering the MPs when it comes to Brexit, which makes I understand why Theresa May is a bit of a loner. They say, well, she's got no friends. Well, that's because people don't talk to her to do any of these kind of negotiations. They're going through Philip the whole time.
Very interesting that. Very interesting that. Of course, he personally gained when billions of pounds worth of weaponry was sold to Saudi Arabia. He personally gained. In fact, he accompanied her on trips there as well. Tony Gosling is on now, as well as Iran. It was interesting to notice that some very prominent tech people were at Bilderberg over the weekend, former heads of Google and a lot of current tech super kids or super whizzes, whatever you want to call them. And I'm very interested in that because I think this year and maybe next year we're going to see a bigger crackdown on your freedom and my freedom to disseminate information online. And I wonder, the presence of so many techie type people, now you might say they're always there, Richie, in which case I'll shut up, but they were there and they talked about artificial intelligence, they talked about the weaponization of social media, Tony. This is huge.
Well, the weaponization of the social media that they started and that they own and control. Interesting, isn't it? And, of course, it has been weaponized. We've seen all sorts of ways over the last few years that's the case, where, for example, there are front companies like Integrity Initiative, which are funded by MI6, and they are using those social media accounts to diss the Labour Party, to diss Corbyn and, you know, get involved in politics. So they have been weaponizing it for a long time. They're very cheeky, aren't they? Say, we're going to discuss the weaponization of social media, which we weaponized and we control. Peter Thiel, PayPal, almost everything big in tech, he's had a hand in. Facebook, various other ones. Something suddenly occurred to me as well about Rory Stewart is Craig Murray confirming he was working for MI6, definitely working for MI6, because Craig was in the next country, and when he was ambassador he said, well, I know Rory Stewart was working for MI6, and so I could just tell you, yes, he was, definitely. So this is the sort of thing we're dealing with. We're dealing with the Secret Services secretly having their place people in key positions. Stewart, of course, is now a minister as well, and making sure that the decisions, he was also chair of the Defence Select Committee, which has a 100 billion budget or so I think it's actually between, is it 80 billion or something, to, and he's chair of it. He was chair of it. So MI6 have got their own person in chairing the, not an MP that's representing us, an MP that's representing them as chair of a committee like that. So they can control really what money gets spent where and what preparations are made for war. And that's their job, MI6. They've been starting wars ever since, since the First World War and the Second World War. But look, you asked me about the techie side. You're right. It's this year more and more. And what makes me, again, concerned is the presence of Baker, James Baker, who's the head of the war games people at the Pentagon. Right. Now, so what they do is they game these attacks on Iran. They play various games. Will this work? Will that work? They have all sorts of factors in these games, things like psychological warfare involved in them. And you could probably even go, I think there's a magazine called Modern War or Modern Warfare, which actually has a target Iran war game that you can buy, you know, play this thing with your friends if you really want to. And it just shows us where we are with this. So they've been trying out these things, probably with the help of computers and things like that. And they keep going until they find, well, this one actually seems to work. On this game, we beat the Iranians, so we're ready. You know, and they, what they do is they'll game these things, and then if something is successful, then they'll actually play it out. And, of course, that leads to all sorts of things that they love too, which is clampdowns on freedom of the press. And just to round that off, Assange, charged with publishing state secrets. That you cannot be charged with publishing state secrets. This is unbelievable, Richie. You can be published for stealing state secrets and giving them to someone else to publish or publishing themselves. But if others have got those state secrets, given them to you, and the state has leaked those secrets by whatever means, you should be able to publish them. And there's no reason why not, under law, in the US or in the UK, or under international law, that a journalist or a publisher is not allowed to publish a state secret. I mean, that's actually what Julian Assange has been doing so successfully for the last 15 years or so in basically explaining that the United States is a fascist country, and they have been carrying out these fascistic attacks, these regime changes, completely against international law, and he has made their reputation mud forever. And they just don't like him for doing that. That shooting the messenger is exactly what they're doing with Assange, and it's absolutely appalling the British are going along with it.
I wonder about his health. We'll stay with him for a minute. He didn't make a video appearance in court last week because he's unwell, and WikiLeaks spokespeople were looking fairly grave and fairly concerned. And when you think of how long he was in that one room and effectively in solitary confinement, I know it's not like solitary if you were sent to Broadmoor or Strangeways, but it must have been a dreadful thing. I wonder just how ill he is. He might be seriously ill, that man, psychologically.
Well, I mean, certainly he's scared. And he's afraid. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. It's been a psychological torture for him. I mean, he has every right to expect the protection of the British law. And what's happened is the British law has been used to get him. And I think we see this in many, many ways, actually. Things like the deportation of people like Abu Qatada, Abu Hamza, of Harun Aswat, who was the mastermind of the 7/7 bombings. You know, what actually happens through the courts is that there's a tremendous, it seems, anything really political, like the Assange business, the courts, you just simply cannot rely on. They are fixed, and there's no justice there. You're not getting justice. So we've got that sort of system. I mean, obviously, Assange realizes that. All I can say is, if people are wanting to do this sort of thing, then they have to get into parts of the world where they are safe, where they won't be extradited to the United States like this. And it was just disgusting to see Jeremy Hunt, who's also a leadership contender, tweeting the other day, some negative tweet about Assange, and he had every opportunity to hand himself in, blah, blah. He didn't have to go to the Ecuadorian embassy. Well, we now know that all of the charges against him from Sweden were cooked up by the intelligence services of Britain, Sweden, the United States, and that the woman who was supposedly, seduced by him, or, you know, this word rape is a bit of a joke, really, because actually all it was sex without a condom, and that, you know, under Swedish law, that can be construed as rape. And, actually she was a CIA woman. it's now known that she was working, she'd worked in the past anyway, for the CIA.
How do we know that as a fact?
Basically, it was just a honey trap.
How do we know that's a fact, that she worked for the CIA? What's the...
Well, that is out. I mean, I would just, I mean, her name has been linked to CIA operations in the past. So I would suggest people, I can't lay my finger on exact documents now. All I'd say is, do an internet search, not necessarily Google, in order to, in fact, you probably won't find anything on Google. They're very good these days at, you find nothing when you're looking for exactly what you want to look at on the Google search. Which, by the way, of course, he was there, Eric Schmidt at Bilderberg. All these people are there. He should be, Eric Schmidt should be on the outside of Bilderberg with Luke, with Charlie Skelton, and he should be using his technology to spy on what they're up to and exposing the wars they're creating and the financial shenanigans that they're up to, the deals that they're doing. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, you'll have to look that one up, I'm afraid, but I can't lay my fingers on it immediately, but she's definitely, definitely in the past been working for the CIA, no doubt about that.
He wasn't too bright then, was he? Let's be honest about it. I mean, I always saw a bit of arrogance about Assange. That's what I saw. I'm not knocking him for it, not criticising him for it, but I thought that Assange, in the early days, enjoyed the attention that he was getting as this champion of free speech. He was a bit of a ham. I've never liked him personally, but I endorse everything you said about what he did and the leaks and everything else. But on that, I mean, he would have had to know after the Iraq war logs and the Chelsea Manning videotape of the murder of the journalist, he would have had to know that he was susceptible to a sting like that, and yet he fell for it. He had unprotected sex with CIA woman.
We all have weaknesses, and you know, yeah. I don't think any of us are 100% able to cope with any kind of thing that can be thrown at us, and that was clearly his. And actually, in law, it should have been over. You know, I mean, there she was, wasn't she, tweeting the day afterwards or the same evening that he was supposed to have, in big inverted commas, raped her. She was saying how cool it was. All these guys are so cool. Just afterwards, you know, Assange is so cool. You know, and that's not what you tweet if you've just been raped, is it? Obviously. So this has all been cooked up, Richie. Seems pretty obvious to me. One other thing to say about the Bilderberg is this whole link to the Zionist fundamentalist attitudes of people like Pompeo. He is a Christian Zionist, and I think if your listeners don't understand what Christian Zionism is now, you need to really get to grips with it, because they keep talking about the evangelicals, don't they? They talk about the far right, Christian right. Well, yes, many of them are right-wing, but the Zionism is really, those terms are a bit misleading. Really, it's the fact that the Christian Zionists, which is so dangerous, because they actually believe that Netanyahu is doing stuff for God. And I noticed that even Netanyahu himself was saying that God is on our side. You know, they're starting to get into this now, quite openly in Israel, that we are doing God's work. And as soon as you start to see that sort of thing, it should ring all sorts of alarm bells with people, because by no means all Christians are supporters of the, or Jews, of course, are supporters of the actions of the Zionist state. In fact, what the Israelis have been doing in the Middle East is just simply as the same as the old Crusaders were doing hundreds of years ago, is to be a bulwark for Western and European power in the Middle East in order to try and take over that part of the world and occupy it with their own twisted version, like a sort of weird Puritans, of what Christianity is. But, you know, what they're doing, of course, is exactly the same as the Crusaders, who left the place after leaving rivers of blood everywhere. Nothing very spiritual about that.
No, it's interesting you mentioned Netanyahu and God. It reminds me of something said by Golda Meir many, many years ago. You know, again, I've often said on programs I've made over the years that I believe Israel to be illegitimate. It's an illegal state. It shouldn't exist. And I've taken my hits for that, but that's fine. But Golda Meir famously said, this country exists as the accomplishment of a promise made by God himself. It would be absurd to call its legitimacy into account. And that's the only claim that Israel makes to its own legitimacy. It's the one they trot out time and time and time again. Well, we don't need to prove it. It's in the Bible. basically. And that's it.
Well, I mean, and also, of course, this is all going on back at home here. The Labour Party, the opposition party, the only party that is really pro-Palestinian generally, is under attack. And it was so fascinating to see Lord Falconer come out against Pete Wilsman. I mean, he's the Iraq war criminal, isn't he? He's the guy, Lord Falconer, during Tony Blair's time, that refused to release the legal advice he'd given about the Iraq war being illegal. So, you know, he was Attorney General. So, you know, Falconer, for him to come out and support the suspension of Pete Wilsman, well, it just shows you what the Israel lobby is very much alive and well within the Labour Party. And you're quite right, really, I suppose, to criticise Corbyn for simply failing to deal with it. And, you know, many people have done the same.
Yeah, that's right. On that, final question for today. Thanks for coming on today, my friend. I know a lot of people wanted to speak to you after the weekend that was in it. George Galloway was fired by Talk Radio. He tweeted something on Saturday night during the Champions League final, and it was a tribute to the socialist working class spirit of Merseyside. He invoked the memory of Bill Shankly and all the rest of it. And then he tweeted at the end of it, "No Israel flags on the cup," or "no Israeli flags on the cup." Was he being a bit stupid? And even if he was, surely he didn't deserve to be fired for that.
Well, definitely not, no. And this is happening all the time now, isn't it? Anybody that criticises Israel can be fired for it, which is insane. I mean, this is another indication that things are really hotting up for this war. Now, if you're trying to prepare a war, you want to have all your ducks lined up in place, everything ready to go, your tanks, and anything that's going to undermine you from home has got to go, hasn't it? So I think that's really what's driving all of this. What with this state visit from Trump as well? This is a state visit. Remember, we've got a zombie prime minister. So Trump is not going to be meeting with politicians, really. And if he does, he's not going to be taking any interest in what they're saying. It's really the likes of MI6 he'll be meeting with. It's the military he'll be meeting with. It's Her Majesty's Armed Forces he'll be meeting with. And I noticed just in a couple of weeks' time, there's going to be a massive meeting of the, I think it's called the Atlantic Council, on the British aircraft carrier over in the US, which will almost certainly be finalising whatever plans it is to have this fight with the Iranians. Now, you know, the whole Syria thing didn't really work out for them, but they've still got another one to go. And, you know, I'm quite certain that they're absolutely intent on usually, I would suggest some sort of false flag attack in order to get this Iranian war going. Even though the Iranians have had such a long, long time to prepare for it, Richie, I just think we need to be just really clear that this cannot be allowed to happen. And let's just hope that people within the US and the UK who are switched on and in some sort of position of power within the armed forces, wherever the power lies, are going to be making sure that that doesn't happen. And maybe they can't do that openly. They might have to do it from behind the scenes. But if that war does kick off, you're looking at a real load of dominoes falling, with the Russians getting involved, the Americans getting involved, the Chinese getting involved, could even, you know, turn into a world war. So that's one we've definitely got to say thus far and no further.
Well, as long as we can get online to do the programmes that we do, we can at least counter that silence from the mainstream media on these issues. Go and check out thisweek.org.uk. Check out bilderberg.org. The Politics Show Fridays with Tony Gosling on BC FM is a must listen radio show. There isn't anything like it on FM radio anywhere in Europe anymore, sadly. And even if there were...
Well, we keep fighting to keep it going.
I know, you're under attack there,
I know. This one for Friday, I had Charlie Skelton on there live, and also a guy called Manfred Petrisch, who's from Switzerland, so it was really good to get a Swiss perspective. He worked in the financial sector in Switzerland, and he got fed up with living in Switzerland, saying that it's controlled by NATO. The country's controlled by NATO and the city of London, and he's had enough of it. So he moved over to Abkhazia on the Black Sea, which is just in between Russia and... Oh, gosh, I'm not sure. It's Georgia, somewhere like that. Beautiful place he's got, but he's able to commentate after having switched sides, really, going over to the Russians.
Yeah, brilliant stuff, Tony. Great show, mate. You know I mean that. Keep it up. Check it out, thisweek.org.uk. Follow Tony on Twitter. There's only one Tony Gosling. Thanks for your time this Monday. Speak soon, mate. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks, Tony. Tony Gosling, live on the line from Bristol this afternoon. My name is Richie Allen. This is The Richie Allen Show, live right now on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, my own website. And I do understand that towards the end of my conversation with Tony, there was an interruption in the stream, and I can see this out of the corner of my eye, because in the studio, over to the right, away from the desk, is the computer that handles the stream, and I noticed that it had gone down. I just ploughed on with Tony, because once I've got internet, I can carry on with the interviews and record the programme anyway. You know, I wouldn't stop because I'm online, but the stream did drop out momentarily. It's a very rare thing. It happens every now and then. It could be a problem with the server, but we seem to be back up and running for the last 7 or 8 minutes, and hopefully we won't have any more problems this evening.